Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where we strive to be open-minded and open-hearted. We welcome you, no matter where you are on this journey of life. We welcome you no matter what your sexual orientation, your gender identification, color of your hair, your abilities or disabilities. We welcome you. I am Sandy Ingham. I am Prairie's halftime minister. Sometimes I do the service, as I am this morning. Sometimes people from outside the congregation do the service, and often people from within our congregation do the service. But if you are new or visiting or checking us out, we encourage you to come more than once because the services are very different from Sunday to Sunday. And if you are one of the people in those categories, there will be a chance later on in the service to introduce yourselves if you so desire. We try not to push you, but we tend to be extroverts here, I guess. We may all turn around and stare at you, but you still do not have to introduce yourself if you do not want to. So next weekend, on the 16th, is at 7 o'clock, is the wine and cheese party. It sounded so far away, didn't it? And here it comes. There'll be a performance by the newly formed Prairie Ukulele Group. And we'll open the 1985 time capsule, and there will be history displays. Then on the 17th, Sunday, usual service at 10 a.m., but it will be a very different service. We'll be honoring people, who joined each decade. There'll be a potluck afterwards, and Barbara Chatterton says you should bring appetizers, retro food if you want to. Sorry, I've become a foodie as the years have gone on. Jell-O mold, oh dear. But that will be fun, actually. Food from past decades. Be creative, finger foods and so on. Then there will also be history displays, again, here and over in the annex, and, oh, guided tours even, on this building and next door, and outside, because wonderful things have been done outside. We do have a large, we have a lot of grounds. And the RE committee and our wonderful director of religious education and the kids and so many volunteers have done so much to make those grounds amazing. The opening words are words from Universalist Unitarian minister Richard Gilbert. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come hurt and afraid. We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith, who come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family, whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on this journey, we bid you welcome. May the flame here lit be to us a symbol of the torch that is passed from hand to hand and life to life, of caring and concern and the passion for involvement which have marked the women and men of our liberal faith for many generations. I have a brief reading to share with you by Anthony Fries Perino, titled Summer's End. He writes, one day a little boy was playing in front of his house when it occurred to him that he had never seen an adult playing with a red wagon like his. And he burst into tears. When his mother asked why he was crying, the boy said he was afraid that when he grew up, he wouldn't be able to play with his red wagon anymore. The mother assured the child that when he grew up, he could play with his red wagon if he wanted to. That quieted him for a moment, but then he burst into even greater sobs. The mother asked, "What's the matter now?" The boy replied, "I'm afraid that when I grow up, I won't want to play with my red wagon anymore." Thus, many of us, in more sophisticated ways, borrow trouble from tomorrow and let today, the only time we have to live, be consumed by the interest we pay on the loan. I love Unitarian Universalism, but if ever there was an overused word, it is that word, love. So I don't use it frivolously or lightly, although, of course, like all of you, I'll say, "Oh, I love dark chocolate," or "I love peanut butter." But I am using this word, love, this morning to mean, love as a verb, meaning to cherish, to be devoted to feel passion for, to hold dear. Last Sunday's service, the water ceremony, and today's service mark the official or maybe unofficial beginning of our church year. This morning, I want to celebrate our free-thinking, liberal, religious tradition. I am using the word religion to mean a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. And that is actually one of the dictionary definitions of the word religion. I love Unitarian Universalism. I remember the first time I stepped into a Unitarian Universalist church. It sounds a bit like the beginning of a bad bar joke. An optimistic, spiritual, probably, young woman, one doubtful about any particular religion's claim to the truth, and wary of God talk, this young woman walks into a bar, oh no, a church. And the punchline is still happening. It was First Unitarian Society, right here in Madison. The Reverend Max Gabler gave the reflection on that Sunday in the mid-1970s. I no longer remember exactly what he spoke about. What I remember is my astonishment and amazement that there was a large room full of people who seemed to hold some of the beliefs I had. That we are all connected. The earth is sacred, therefore we need to take better care of it. All life is sacred. Make love, not war. I'm a child of the 60s, okay? What can I say? I don't need or want intermediaries, be they in the form of Jesus or priests or holy texts, to experience the divine, the sacred, the holy. But coming out of Northwest Pennsylvania, where I was born and raised, I was pretty sure that I was about the only person in the world who believed such things, radical things. I had accepted the fact that I was odd and did not fit into mainstream religion or culture for that matter. That all changed when I walked into First Unitarian that Sunday. I had a beautiful, strong sense that I had come home. I had come home theologically, spiritually. I had come home in and to love. It would take me a long time, though, to trust in the power of love. I'm still working on that. To believe that love is real. That love can be a powerful force in the world. Love trumps hate. Love is a very scarce resource in all societies, said the person being interviewed on a national public radio segment that I unfortunately only tuned into at the end of the interview. Well, yes, yes it is. It is a very scarce resource. Did you know that the word love does not even appear in our seven principles? Not once. I hadn't realized this until this summer when someone pointed it out at our annual general assembly. If you look through the listing of the sources from which we draw, and it's on that page right before the first hymn, and the sources are listed below the principles, you will find the words love and loving just once each under the Jewish and Christian teaching, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. I loved the Presbyterian faith tradition in which I was raised. Eventually, though, I found it to be too limiting. When I became a relatively thinking, reasoning adult, Presbyterian theology did not make sense to me. If you look at the two quotes at the top of your order of service, these nicely sum up this sense of expanding awareness that I continue to experience as a Unitarian Universalist. One of them is by Unitarian Universalist minister Jack Mendelsohn, who was in Rockford, I think, for a while. And the other one is by Sophia Lyon-Fawes, our famous religious educator. I'm not going to read them. I hope you take the program home and read them, those two quotes. They sum up very nicely what we're all about. I love Unitarian Universalism. I cherish it because it is what I return to again and again and again for solace and strength when the world is just too much. I come back to this source, the source for me of what is right with the world, the source of possibility, the source that reassures me time after time that humans can change the world, that humans are basically good, that humans can create heaven on earth. Unitarian Universalism draws me back again and again to the truth that we are responsible for each other. Unitarian Universalism challenges me to continue my individual search for truth and meaning in tandem with the communal search. When I was in New Orleans for General Assembly at the end of June, I wandered around, because I always try to wander around in whatever city General Assembly takes place. And on a raining, incredibly windy day, I came across a young man asking for money. Of course, I came across many homeless people. But he, and I do give to the homeless people. I have my couple of favorite people on State Street, on the square. But you can't give to all of them. Or at least I can't. So I told Little Fib, which I often do, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have any cash. But I did. And I started to walk by him, and he said, the last person I asked was a man who told me I was a bum, and he swore at me. He swore at me, this young man said. He swore at me, and he told me to get a job. And then the guy started to cry, the young man. So I turned around, and I said, oh, I do have a little money, or something like that, you know. And then we started to talk. He and his wife, and they couldn't have been more than 20, had been on, they were natives of New Orleans, and they decided that they couldn't find jobs or anything, so they decided they'd try another town, not terribly far away in Louisiana, but it didn't work out. So they came back. But in the process of returning to New Orleans, their suitcase had been stolen with what little cash they had was in there, and their cell phones were in there, and their computers. They had a computer, they said. And the wife was up the street getting a hot cup of coffee. It was cold. It was 80 degrees, but it was cold because we were wet. And she came back, and we sort of all introduced each other. And we stood there for probably 10 minutes, at least, talking about the fragility of human life, talking about safety nets, of which they had none. Although they were savvy enough, they had gotten a caseworker. And, you know, just life. We talked about life. And then we parted. We walked a little ways together, and they went that way, and I went that way to go back to my very nice hotel to get ready to go to a actually fairly expensive dinner, which did not go on my professional expense account. I hope that we will remember the challenge that our faith tradition presents us with when it comes time to make a final decision about placing three small lockers on our property for three homeless people who have almost worked their way out of homelessness, just need a little bit of help. I love Unitarian Universalism because within its embrace, I can tell the story of Teddy to the children. And by doing so, hopefully help counteract some of the hateful stories that are out there about the other. In this case, those dear, dear, vulnerable people who find themselves in the wrong physical body through no fault of their own. This faith tradition strives to support all people, whatever their gender identification. In my growing up Presbyterian years, we did not tell stories in any way remotely related to what it means to realize your full potential. There were only limited ways, though, to reach your full potential, and these were handed to us by outside authorities who knew nothing about the individuals they were telling how to live their lives. Rebecca Parker tells this story about letting others define to us who they are. It's Seattle, the early 1980s, and she was the minister of the Wallingford United Methodist Church at a time when anti-gay sentiment was heating up in our city, she writes. Our denomination had just banned the ordination of lesbian and gay people. This was just in the 80s. And the congregation decided to take a proactive stand in supporting them. We wanted to express hospitality and welcome, but we quickly discovered that those who had been kicked out of church weren't going to return just because we hung out a welcome sign. There was no basis for trust that we meant what we said. How did people know that we weren't trying to lure them into the church so we could then convict them of their sin? No one just came to church. They called first. Testing the waters, they asked, "Is this the church that says lesbian and gay people are welcome?" At first, we did not always know if the caller was a person looking for a church that was genuinely welcoming, or someone who felt our stand was wrong and wanted to make sure we knew exactly where hell was and how close we were to falling in. Nina, our church administrator, became highly adept at handling these calls. In response to the opening question, she would carefully explain our church's stand. We accepted people of diverse sexual orientations. We welcomed people as they were, and the fellowship of our church and its activities was fully open to all. She told me that eventually every caller would come around to saying, "The real reason I'm calling is..." One day the caller said, "The real reason I'm calling is that I'm a man, but I like to dress up in women's clothes. What I want to know is, if I come to church in a dress, will I be welcome?" Nina paused for a second and said, "Is it a really ugly dress?" The next Sunday, the caller did come to church, wearing a lovely red Chanel suit, complete with hat and gloves. She was warmly welcomed. Because I struggle daily with trying not to be judgmental, I return again and again to the source of my strength and to the stories, such as that one, of ever expanding inclusiveness. I love Unitarian Universalism because it takes laughter seriously. Most of us don't have enough laughter in our lives, but as a group, I have found that we have a remarkable sense of humor. We are accomplished at using humor to make a broader point. Unitarian Universalist minister Jane Zepka has a little essay called Notes from the Zoo, in which she says, I spent a day at the Brooklyn Zoo. It just happened that way. And when it happens that a minister spends the day at the zoo, I believe it is customary for that minister to observe that animals remind one so much of people, though not, of course, of members of any congregation. Well, it's true. We and the other animals have a lot in common, a lot to discuss, and a lot to learn from each other. In the brand new jungle exhibits, I learned three things, which far exceeds my usual learning limit during days off with the family. An elephant's gestation period is almost 2 years. 2 years, according to the guide, is a pretty long time to be pregnant. I had to agree, Zepka says. But eventually, after what must take enormous patience and some very hard work on the big day, a beautiful infant weighing at least 125 pounds is born. The elephants reminded me that big, beautiful projects of nearly any description require a long wait. I saw a rhinoceros up close. Its skin seemed thicker than any skin I'd seen or anything during my 35 years. The guide knew people take one look and think, thick skin. So he told us how sensitive rhino skin is to sun and insect bites. Who knew? The rhinos reminded me that the thick-skinned feel pain, like the rest of us. And then the third thing, the tapir looks like a gigantic pig and escapes extinction in several countries where, for religious reasons, people avoid eating pork. But tapirs are actually related not to pigs, but to horses. The tapir reminded me that the right thing often happens for the wrong reason. I love Unitarian Universalism because I can use a title such as today's, When Lizards Do Push-Ups, and you will wonder about it. Well, I hope you will. And you will probably be curious. But I can't imagine any of you admonishing me for being whimsical, nor do I think that any of you would ask me to be a less zany theologian. When lizards do push-ups, they are frightened, which touched off speculation in my mind about what if Unitarian Universalists did push-ups. And why would we do that, other than for the obvious physical benefits, although I doubt that very few of you, including myself, in this room could do more than one push-up. But you can refute that later if you'd like. I was thinking more of mental push-ups, actually. We too, like the lizards, might do them as a way of confronting fear. We might also do push-ups, at least metaphorically, as a means of expanding our minds, making them stronger and more flexible, excuse me. And we might also then find a way of handling fear, because life is scary. We are all afraid. We all would like to avoid the problems of the world, but that is not where the practice of Unitarian Universalism will take us. Again and again, I return to the wisdom to be found in this faith tradition of ours. I recently reread some essays written by Rebecca Parker. Parker, I've mentioned many, many times before, is a mentor of mine and a role model, and she was president of Star King School for the Ministry when I was in seminary there. Some of you might remember that before the Big Seven, that is our seven principles, there was the gigantic Big Three. This mostly came out of Unitarianism, not Universalism. Remember? Remember the three? The Trinity? The Unitarian Trinity? Hasn't been that long ago. Tolerance, reason, and? No, we'd never mention love. Freedom. Tolerance, reason, and freedom. When I first became a UU, that's what we talked about. The principles were in process, I think. So we have incorporated a lot of those big three into the seven principles. But I also think maybe others began to think that the word tolerance isn't a particularly inclusive word. It implies that, we'll tolerate this. We'll put up with something. But that word is not as powerful as the first principle. We covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That's significantly different from tolerating someone. Parker goes on in that essay to retell that story that probably most of you know about the blind people around an elephant, and they each touch a different part, you know, and if you touch the trunk, you would think it was one thing, a snake maybe, but then, of course, out of that, she goes on to say that we can never know the whole truth, the whole story, and therefore we need to listen to each other. But we cannot define who they are, who those other people are. We have to allow them to define to us who they are. And that really hit home for me at General Assembly, because we did a lot of work on racism. And this, I think, has been one of our biggest mistakes as humans, not just as Unitarian Universalists. We have to wait and let the people of color define who they are to us. We have to stop telling them who they are, or implying who they are, implying that they want to be just like us, right? So anyway, I love Unitarian Universalism because just like Teddy defined who he was in that story when he moved his bow from here to here, we can do that in our congregations. So tolerance, reason, and freedom. Parker talks about the reason, saying that that's the second great principle of liberal religion. And we developed that. Our roots go way, way back, as I hope most of you know. This is protest against a despairing and negative view of the human being. Authoritarian religion views people negatively and establishes sources of authority beyond human experience, with the supernatural, with holy texts, with leaders, canonized tradition, and so on. In other words, telling us what a proper religious person is. But our religious ancestors wouldn't have any of that. They couldn't see the sense in that. They believed that we are all born with the capacity to do good or to do evil, and one of our most important gifts is our ability to think and to reason. Rebecca Parker's grandmother, whom she calls an old-fashioned rationalist liberal Christian, taught that you should never believe anything unless you can, with your own mind, determine that it is trustworthy. And her grandmother could dismiss whole systems of thought with one word: nonsense. Her ultimate criterion in theological and philosophical issues was, does it make sense? Sense and nonsense was the dividing line for her grandmother. And then, of course, that third major principle, freedom, which compels us to action, because without freedom, the sacred worth of every person cannot be realized and fulfilled. Think of all the social justice work that we Unitarian Universalists and other progressive people are involved in. I mean, you could probably each come up with a name, with an organization: Habitat for Humanity, Moses, Beacon House, that we're supporting for the rest of the year with half of our offering, Dane County UUs for Social Action, on and on. If we're all going to flourish, we have to work on the impediments that keep us from flourishing. And of course, there are what Rebecca Parker calls the inner or the internal oppressor. And I could name, as could you, so many of those: lack of self-confidence, lack of self-esteem, addictions, grief, loss of loved ones, anxiety, fear. Freedom doesn't always mean saving the world or working to end oppressions, although that is certainly an important part of freedom work. Freedom can also mean being present with and to someone else when they need us, when life has put up too many roadblocks. Sometimes we need to just be there for others. And I think when you do that, you find it's not only a freeing experience for yourself, but also you will find that freedom, exactly like tolerance and reason, come down to love. Which brings me to almost to the end of my remarks, but to the word soul and to fear and the connection between those two. We live in a crazy world. I didn't have to tell you that. One that seems to be getting crazier by the minute. It's been crazy for quite a while, though. Rebecca Parker talks about the crazy things that were happening in Seattle in the 1990s. She relates that she took a walk to return a video at a store at the edge of a park, but what she didn't know was there was a big anti-racism protest there and an overly aggressive police response. She writes, "This is our world, filled with acts of violence, abuse, and racial hatred. Our response is grief, silence, distance, and paralysis, or sometimes gallows humor. When I arrive home from the brewing riot, I say to my housemate, 'Sorry, we're having a riot. I couldn't get through the police line to the video store. We'll have to take the video back later.' 'Okay,' my friend says, 'Do you think they'll waive the late fee?'" And this, "My hometown," Parker says, which is Seattle, "was required by the Reagan administration to implement emergency policies in the case of a nuclear attack. One policy read, 'In case of an evacuation due to a nuclear attack, citizens may ride the metro buses without exact change.'" This is our world. We are encouraged to let fear govern our lives. But nothing will ever change if fear is our governing principle. Change will happen when we learn to live with soul. And by that I mean believing deep down in that we are connected to each other and to the earth, and not getting sidetracked with discussions and arguments about whether or not we have souls. I am talking about living with soul. Entirely different. I am saying that there is something greater than our individual life, something larger than ourselves. It doesn't matter where you are on the religious spectrum, or even if you don't put yourself there. It doesn't matter if you're atheist, theist, Christian, Wiccan, agnostic, Buddhist, Muslim, free thinker, humanist. There is something greater than ourselves. And for me, this is well defined by an Emerson quote, "A wisdom, a presence, a grace, whose beatitude is accessible to us." Emerson wrote that in The Oversoul. Rebecca Parker tells us that to have soul is to hear life's deep music and to move in response to its pulse, rhythm, and harmony. To have soul is to be awake to life. To have soul is to live with a sensitive awareness of the real presence of other human beings and the earth. It is turning your hands to the work of justice and compassion, your mind to the call of wisdom, your heart to decisions for life. It is making your whole being an act of praise. I come back to Unitarian Universalism when I am afraid. My fears don't go away, but I know that I can work through and with them. I know when I think about this free-thinking heritage that has been given to us, I know that no matter how afraid I am, no matter how scary the world appears to be, I can, and I will, keep on believing in the power of love to overcome hate and fear. I come back to Unitarian Universalism because it refreshes my soul, my deep inner being. I come back for the laughter, for the tears, for the intellectual challenges, and for the dance that we do together. From a different Parker, Theodore Parker, "Be ours a religion which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed, all truth, its ritual, works of love, its profession of faith, divine living. Let it be so. Go in peace, do good works, but don't forget to find laughter and joy along the way. It's bread day, right? Buy baked goods, drink coffee, greet your neighbor.